Hey there. This is Winning at Life, live financial news talk radio. What a week we've had. What about those jobs numbers? What about your 401k? How is it doing? Any annuities, mutual funds, ETFs? How about debt? You want to have a conversation? 504-260-0995. It'll be more like one of those informational conversations.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Hey, so I was thinking of how things are so relative. Remember how when you were a kid and you were mowing lawns, or you were working, fixing washing machines and a laundromat when you were like 12 or something? Remember whenever you got $10 and how you felt like you were walking around in high cotton because you had $10? So fast forward to when I'm in my mid-20s, I had a girlfriend, or this girl I was just dating. Her aunt had died without any kids, so she left her nieces and nephews some money. And she got 10 grand, Gregory, 10 grand. I was, man, what are you going to do with $10,000? Oh, my God. And so I kind of had that feeling again, like I was walking in high cotton. There's going to be some point in my life where it could be me, and it could be like when my parents pass away, and I get 100 grand, and I'm going to think, wow, I'm living in high cotton. This is great. But just like what happened in those previous scenarios, it'll be gone in 6 months. If I had $10 when I was a kid, I could hold on to it, and I could squeeze maybe a quarter into the Pac-Man over here, or maybe buy a pack of gum over here. But 6 months later, it would be gone. When my girlfriend inherited 10 grand, it was a little bit before I met her. It was gone by the time we were dating. And then I hear stories about people that get 100 grand, they get a big inheritance, and within a couple years, it's gone.
You know, it's the time frame you put on the money. If you're making $30,000 a year and you get 10 grand, you're not looking at the year's worth of it. You're like, gosh, you know, when you think about it, what's your paycheck? Probably 2 grand a month, let's say. And then you come into 10 grand and it's like, wow, you're looking at that. You look at 100,000 and and you could be making 100,000 a year, but now you have all of a sudden $100,000. So you're looking at it in compressed time, and you probably treat it that way. And that's why it's gone.
Right.
Cause you look at it like, man, okay. And it was great in a short period of time. The problem is that feeling, that sensation, and that getting the money routinely like that isn't going to be repetitive. So it's gone and like, wow, what happened to that?
So I was trying to find some sort of stat that would let me know how big of an issue this was. The closest I can find isn't how long does it take, or what's the average time it takes for people to blow through their inheritance. The closest stat I could find is the lottery winners, people that just have $1 million dumped into their lap. How long does it take? Well, it shows that it doesn't matter the amount of the lottery winnings.
The time is consistent.
Absolutely.
That they go through it.
And 70% of them will lose or spend all of their money and be right back at break even in 5 years.
That's what I was going to say. If you had asked me, I was going to say 5 years.
This counts for people that win $200 million. They will be broke in 5 years.
Whether it's $50 million or $200 or $300 million. 5 years.
Okay, so that makes me think, and then this is just a pattern of human behavior that we need to identify, explain, and then start working our way around it. If you're going to be a good financial planner one of these days, you're going to have to learn some of these human behavior traits and start planning accordingly. But I'm sure you've seen this. You see people all the time that come into a pile of money because it was an inheritance, or maybe husband passed away and he had a big life insurance policy. But what we know going into it, if it's at $10,000, if you get $100,000, $1 million, $500 million, it has a tendency to go in the exact same time frame if the person is exhibiting the exact same human behavior reactions to that money. Fascinated by that. Totally fascinated.
I had heard somebody tell me somebody recently picked up the Powerball had gotten pretty big recently. Somebody won it.
And $600 million last week.
And did they already show up to get it, or?
No, not that I heard.
Okay. Somebody had mentioned that because, you know, a while back, you know, the biggest ever was like $1.5 billion, and somebody picked up that money. And the thing is, they waited a number of months before they picked it up. To me, that's a better sign. Now, statistically speaking, they're going to go through that too. But I believe being they took several months, unless it was like, you know, it was under the couch cushion and we just found it, so we went and cashed it in. I don't think that was the case. They went about taking care of business, planning, structuring to do the right thing with that money. And they also showed up anonymously. That's would say, yeah, there's planning done there because you just really don't want to be public. But when somebody wins a giant one and they show up the next day or the next week, that right there tells you they're fitting into that 5-year plan.
The charts on this are amazing because if you don't spend all that money within 5 years, the odds are that you're never going to run out of money. Now, there's a few exceptions to the rule, people that run out in 10, 20 years, but most of them either run out in 5 years or never run out. It's almost like there's no middle ground. Either you hit a home run or you ground it out to first. There's not any doubles or triples in this game.
It's just like the $625 million. You know, if you're spending $10 million a year, how long is that going to last?
60?
60 years. Yeah. James? What?
I'm not going to run out at that clip.
That's right. And that's at 0%. Okay. You net $600 million and you go and spend $10 million a year and you just set it up. Don't take any losses or anything, but you're not making any money. You're just like, I'm good at zero and I'm capped at $10 million a year. If I spend it halfway through the year, I've got to wait to next year. That'd be ultimate structuring that, yeah, I'm in a jam for 6 months, brother. I can't help you out, but I'm getting my next check because that's what my trust I set up to do for me.
Right.
So you got 60 years worth. You just figure I'm good till age 100. Just say in your 40,
mm-hmm.
You're good till 100.
I can do that. Let me just win the lottery first.
So and sometimes when we are looking at income planning, just cut right to the core, how long will your money last? You can even plug in a return and kind of say, well, heck, I can get 3% on the money. So that's going to stretch it more or give you more a year. But then you basically divide it out so that this return, this will last you to 110 or 112 or maybe in your case, 95. But that's just simple right there, knowing this kind of balance. Because I had a meeting today with the client. And one of the questions was, she said, you know, my family's wanting to know, and she's been retired a while. She said, my family's kind of wanting to know, am I going to be fine? You know, is my money going to last? And she had a relative live to age, well, actually her dad lived to age 98. And she said, well, yeah, they've kind of asked me to, am I good to age 98? And so we crunched some numbers and I said, yeah, you're still going to have over $1 million. And this was really basing it upon required minimum distributions coming out of the account. And I said, well, as far as from the IRA money, if you just based it on RMDs, you're going to have about 500,000 left. But I said, you still have another $500,000 that we're not showing be in touch because the RMDs are going up every year. So it's plenty of income. Then she has this other block of money. So I said, yeah, it's basically what it amounts to is, yeah, at 98, you're still going to have $1 million. Is that going to be enough?
Enough cushion for you?
Yeah. She said, yeah, they'll be happy to hear.
All right. So what structures are people using when they come into these lump sums? How are they making it last?
Well, first off is margin. Don't spend it all. Even that. Now, you could. Now, lottery winners are different than those that are having to go to work every day, earn it. We have to kind of spend less than we earn, but it's still, you treat the money like I think of treating it more like a business that's kicking you out revenue. And if you put that money to work at a conservative return, you should get this much out and it should support that. Don't overspend that amount. And typically how I would look at it is, let's use around $600 million or whatever it was recently. And you might could take, and let's do it this way. Let's say we net after taxes, whatever, you have $300 million. Okay. And you could look at it simply as, 100 million of it's mad money. You're going to give some away. You're going to spend ridiculous money. But when it comes down to it, this 200 million over here is income generating assets. So whatever you want to buy or do, but otherwise this is income money, that 200 million. So, and you could probably say, set it at a 4% income stream on that. So what's that? 800,000 a year?
That'd be 8 million.
Yeah.
You're just a zero.
Yeah. So when you think about it, if you've got all the big items purchased and whatever, and really, you know, what were you living off of before you hit the darn thing? How much do you want to burn through every year? You know, and that's where I kind of create the giveaway money, the mad money, the charity money, and a cushion there on that for you to overindulge. And then a part is staying aside. Now, from another standpoint, if we've worked and built up that money, are you going to retire and say, well, yeah, I've got 4 million in retirement, but 1 million of it's mad money.
No,
we would never look at it as giveaway money. I talk to individuals with retirement accounts that range from, and I hate to put a range, but let's just say
from zero to
millions.
Okay.
However, if I'm talking to somebody and their world evolves around hypothetically 400,000 or 500,000, you know, I have somebody retiring and say, you know, that's a lot of money. I'm thinking I want to give away $100,000 and then have them look at me and say, well, you know, you think I'll be fine with the rest? Nobody ever does that. Go on the other side. And what retirement amount did I give you there? 400,000?
Yeah.
Five. Okay. Well, what if somebody came to me and asked 4 million for retirement? I've never had the discussion. You know, it's a lot of money. I'm thinking about just giving away $1 million.
Just blowing through the first million.
Yeah. Yeah. Once, and it was years ago, had a couple sit down, and basically they have pensions and everything's in really good shape with their Social Security, and they had about 800,000 in a retirement account. And he said, you know, I just want to take care of the family while I'm living, so I'm pretty much intending to wind down this 800,000. And he gave a specific number of years or something, and looking at the guy's in his early 60s, and he's just going to basically give away essentially to his kids and their families 800 grand over the coming few years.
Oh, it's like a King Lear scenario, right?
Yeah. So, and he said, I'm going to be fine because I got the pension and Social Security. Everything's going to be good. And I said, you know, retirement is a long time. And basically, I told him I disagreed with his philosophy because I said, you don't know what's coming. You don't really know that you won't need that money. Now, there's one thing of taking income from that and gifting it every year, but just to, when you spend all that out and it's gone and one or more of them need some help, what are you going to do? Because you've trained them that you're there for that. Yeah. So we agreed to disagree.
What happens if he winds down that $800,000 and then he lives another 10 years?
Well, he's going to live longer and his wife's going to live longer than him probably. That was part of my point, is we don't know what things are going to cost. We've got this growing debt in the country, and what are we going to do? Default on it? You know what makes the debt work better? Hyperinflation. So things are going to cost more. You thought the Big Mac was going to cost $12 in 20 years. Well, now it costs 20. What are you going to do? Well, you know, I'd like to buy a Big Mac, but I gave away all my money to my kids. The pension doesn't increase. Social Security doesn't increase because the Medicare gets the COLA increases, you know, and my car's 20 years old now. I thought I was going to get one, you know, once every 6 or 7 years, but I've had the same one for 20 years. And I can't get no Big Mac, and the kids need some help. I've done gone through the money. You just don't know. And then here's the thing. We like to go out in the lifestyle we're accustomed to. Had this discussion today with the client that was looking at, is she going to be fine at age 98? And the discussion was, yeah. And even if you're having to, for several years, have a lot of help. Spend money to see that you go out in the lifestyle you're accustomed to. You can spend a lot of money. Well, if all you're getting is a monthly pension check and Social Security, how does that end of life wind down if you don't have the assets to spend? I thought the idea of taking it like it's income and distributing it, but keep the income generating assets intact, become a lot more powerful. And later on the back end of life, if you're wanting to do some of that, maybe that's a better time.
How does risk get involved in setting up a plan like this? You know, you've got the pile of money, you want to make it last as long as possible, and risk could help you get parted from it sooner. Do you go through all safe tools for something like that?
Well, what you ultimately, in most cases, want to find is a blend. And that's where, depending upon their risk number, you find the right mix of equities, and I'll say risk on and risk off management strategies for the money. Now, you'll have some that doesn't want risk on at all. So then, you know, it's a laddering of CDs and other financial tools that doesn't have any risk, but also has liquidity availability built into it as theirs. Because you can say, well, it's no risk, but it still needs to have a liquidity option. I'll just kind of throw that in there as my fine print. But what you want to do is try to levelize risk or levelize volatility versus being completely in equities and taking income out. You know, can kind of be crazy at the time and cause reverse dollar cost averaging.
Oh, those are some big terms there.
I'm sorry. But, you know, it's just when you're selling at, you know, dollar cost averaging in as the market's moving up and down, but you view it on a longer term basis, it's going to be up. So you're putting in money that's growing over time. Well, the opposite is the market's moving up and down. It could be moving up as a long-term, but you're pulling money out, which causes a faster spend down if you're not levelizing volatility.
Okay. So do you see people seeking out risk now that they have this big pile of money to play with? Is there a tendency, like a human behavior tendency to do that?
And we're talking about retirement assets that they've built up.
Right.
We've separated out the fantasy.
We're done with the lotto.
That's fantasy. You know, 1 in 10 million people maybe have a chance at that, or maybe the odds are worse.
Well, I'm kind of, the question really.
But the retirement assets, go ahead.
Is there a difference if you inherit $500,000 versus whether you built that $500,000 up by yourself that you see people when they approach it? Are they a little more risky with the stuff they didn't earn, and they're a little more safe and protective of the stuff that actually came from their sweat equity?
We routinely have discussions with people that inherit money. I had a couple discussions this week. There's no mad money in those discussions. This is about putting it to work, doing the right things, fixing retirement, or paying off. Should I pay off this property? Where do I put this to work so I can use it in the future? This, you know, you kind of say, what, you know, well, that was free money. That free money in this case is what somebody else that worked for that money leaves it to you. We look at that as special money. That is, that represents their life's work that they've imparted to you, or you got part of it along with some siblings or something in that case. And I don't see anybody that, if they're coming in, now, could there be people inheriting it and just going through it? Probably. I don't deal with those people kind of saying, yeah, I'll come into $500,000. I'm going to give you $250,000, but I'm about to burn the rest on a world trip. Never have any discussions like this. This is always about plugging it in. And sometimes we're having discussions and it's life-changing events where these people didn't have a lot retirement, that retirement was not properly funded yet, and now it is. And they're always talking about doing the right thing. How do we put this to work? We're conservative, but we do need it to grow, and we want to peel off income at this point in time. Those are always the discussions we have.
So when we're talking about people finding their risk tolerance, you have it boiled down to a number. New people probably hadn't heard you talk about the risk numbers.
It's somewhere between 1 and 100, never have seen 100, never seen a client in the 90s. Most fall under 60 and above 1. But do we have clients score 15 and 10 and score 1? Yeah, we do. But most fall in a range somewhere between mid-50s to 30.
I think I was 35.
Yeah, so there's a blend right in there, but most don't score higher. And of course, I had a phone call this week with an individual that was rolling over money from the old job, the old 401k. Mm-hmm. And we mentioned that we didn't have the risk number, and the person said, yeah, I can tell you my risk number. It's 0.
Good.
I don't need a test.
Makes it nice and simple.
Yeah, it was nice and simple, but we still sent them the quiz.
Do you have some sort of time scale on if you haven't taken your risk number test in so long, you want them to retake it? Or when they enter a different phase of retirement, you want them to take it?
We don't retest every year, but if I'm feeling a change or questioning or they're reacting differently to certain situations with money, I might say, I think we need to do this again. So there's things you look for in doing that, but it also doesn't hurt to make sure you do it, say, every 3 years, kind of reevaluate risk.
504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Welcome back. Weeknights at 7. You'll find us here every night. Let's see, we are going to be preempted one more time next week by Pelicans basketball. It doesn't hurt my feelings that they won't preempt us anymore for months to come. So tell your friends, Winning at Life, live financial talk radios on every night. Tuesday's the last preempted show for our basketball season. We are pumped to be rolling every night and having conversations with you about your money. So this is Winning at Life, live financial talk radio. I am your host, Gregory Ricks, financial advisor, fiduciary. Yeah, there's that F word, fiduciary by day, radio show host by night with my friend, co-host James Parker.
We are going to be preempted on Tuesday. The next Tuesday, you're not going to be here either. But we're not preempted for basketball. You have a live event.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Now, that's justified.
Pelicans is justified. Don't get us in trouble. Okay. Anthony Davis is already mad at the whole town.
No trouble on that. I just saying, for me not to be here, I'm at another event talking to a group of people about their money. And we're having some wine and some food. That's the justification. It was no slight to the Pelicans.
They just have fun
with
you.
But we're going to be at Keith Young's steakhouse up in Madisonville.
Now, you've eaten at Keith Young's before.
Oh, he makes some good food up there.
Give me the ranking. Where would you put Keith Young's?
Gosh, it's really high up there. Really high up there. It was impressed. I kind of do grade steakhouses mentally, not something I put out there, and I don't know that that's a good thing to do, but his is really good. And the service and everything that you get as well. So I was wowed by the staff and actually got to talk to him. And he's a show listener as well. He loves listening to Winning at Life.
Is his name really Keith Young? Because sometimes someone else started and then it gets bought out. But here's where I grade them. Is it so nice that they have the little thing that sweeps the breadcrumbs off after you've been eating? Some guy comes by and he does the breadcrumb sweep.
Oh, that's like ultimate white linen service, isn't it? When you've got the French bread and it crumbles or whatever type of bread, and it varies. It's not always the French bread.
Sure.
But those are some of the most crumbly. But and I'm kind of messy with that stuff. So if I can mess up my dinner area, I'm going to do it. Not purposely. It happens. But that is so cool when they, and they're about keeping the linen, the table clean. And yeah, I like that effect. That little, it looks like a knife that just, and then it's all clean again.
They're really quick with it. Like they've done it 1,000 bazillion times that day. You can tell.
Yeah. So,
Okay.
Well, I think they're excited to have us up there for the event.
Well, the venue's awesome. What are you going to do though?
Well, we're gonna talk a little bit about wine and food pairing. We're gonna have a little fun with that, but we're gonna talk about money. I've got three core subjects to talk about, but one of the core things that most people ask about, will I have enough money? We're going to address that. We're going to talk about how we utilize our process to get you that information to keep you informed. So it's a combination of talking about investments and income planning. And then the other parts of our process we'll cover is the tax planning aspect. And, you know, one of my favorite things is building tax-free income, a stream of tax-free income or more, multiple of them as well. Cover some of the health concerns in the future, maybe how to leverage your money to get more for later in life when you're needing more help. And Wes Blanchard, the fifth part of that core of the process, is going to spend a few minutes with us. He's got a few ideas on estate planning.
All right. So if you want to be a part of that, GregoryRicks.com or 504-832-9200.
Yeah.
One day.
Info at GregoryRicks.com. Reach out to us through the app. But yeah, you can call right now, leave a message. Just tell them, hey, I want somebody to call me back about the event at Keith Young's Steakhouse. Is, you know, Covington, Madisonville. What's the areas up there? Covington, Mandeville, Abita Springs.
Just North Shore in general.
Yeah, huge area. Hammond, you know, however far you want to drive. You want to drive over from Mobile. It's cool. Baton Rouge, yeah.
All right.
Denham Springs, I'll throw that in there too. They're all listening.
I have the Social Security account I've been working on, Gregory, ever since I was 16 years old. Turned 16, got a job bussing tables at
Armadale Willys. You started building it then?
I did. I've been working on this thing for 25 years now. 25 years I've been working on this Social Security account.
So when you started working, you worked so that you got a Social Security credit.
That's what I was working for. They gave me money too, but I was really looking for those credits. So the money was kind of nice. But I've been working on this for a while. And then eventually, if I live long enough, I'm going to turn it on. I'm going to get some money from it. But what a lot of people don't even put 5 minutes of thought into is that when I'm gone, that account is still going to be working for me in some form or fashion, or still could be working for me. And so I just want to talk about what happens to my Social Security account when I die.
It's interesting that there are about 5 million widows and widowers receiving monthly Social Security benefits based on their deceased spouse's earnings record.
You know, that sounds about right, I guess, but that's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people when you start putting numbers to it like that. And that's affecting a lot of lives. We get callers into the show. We have people coming into the office about it. It's not unusual. I had a discussion this week with a widow. In fact, that had, you know, lost her best friend not long ago. So it's kind of a norm there as well. But widows and widowers can receive reduced benefits as early as age 60 or full benefits at full retirement age. So there's still an income test. See, if widows or widowers qualify for retirement benefits on their own record, they can switch to their own retirement benefit as early as age 62. So you're wanting to look at what's the best scenario. There is an earnings test. You are taking reduced benefits when you turn it on early. FRA for widows, that's full retirement age for widowers, are pretty close to normal benefits. There's just a little bit of variance, and you want to look at that on when you should turn it on and factor in income test if you're still working and when to switch to your own record. And part of this is hopefully you can grow your own record while drawing those benefits. That's really when you get into they took a lot of the strategies away a few years ago on deeming and such, where you could do the file and suspend and draw the spousal and defer. So for people born after 54, that's essentially gone, where that still is available in the widow's benefits.
Sounds nice and complicated, Gregory.
It is. Now, if you're disabled, you could turn on the widow's benefit as early as age 50 if you're disabled and your disability started before or within 7 years of the death of the spouse. Benefits at any age if they have not remarried and if they take care of your child who is under age 16 or disabled and receive benefits on your record. If a widow or widower remarries after they reach age 60 or 50 if disabled, the remarriage will not affect their eligibility for survivor's benefits. But for those widows, widowers, and surviving divorced spouses of the deceased,
okay,
they cannot apply online for survivor's benefits. So I want to put that out there where, you know, you can go out there and register on ssa.gov and turn on your work record of benefits. The widows cannot do that online. They should contact Social Security and request an appointment and go in for a visit. That's how that process works.
Any theories on why they treat that one different? Is it more rife for corruption or fraud or anything?
It's not. Here it is. It's just not simply, oh, I've turned 62. I want to turn it. Oh, I'm FRA next month, full retirement age. Somebody told me, you're supposed to use the word FRA. It's FRA. I'm like, have you ever heard that FRA?
Never once in my life.
No, it's FRA. I'm not comfortable with that terminology as well. But when you reach full retirement age and you go and turn it on, it's clean. Now, when it's benefits, you know, like there's earnings test, there's a reduction, you could turn it on at 60 or if you're disabled, you could turn it on at 50 in an earlier scenario, but then you're deeming your work record. See, it's not just that simple. It's a process. Probably a number of questions, which scenario's best, not that they'll tell you that. But one of the things I suggest is we help clients with that. That's part of our service. That's part of our guided planning system. One of the segments of the process is income planning, and Social Security maximization is a part of that. Even if it's dealing with widow's benefits. And the thing I want to make sure people understand is what are you needing to ask? And really you should kind of already know the answer, but what you're verifying there is a situation. And we've had callers call into the show, James, bring up certain questions, certain situation. And I said, look, this is a unique situation because sometimes we have it like through a scenario at us. And here's how I think that's going to work out based on the rules. But this is a situation I would go in and verify the information or what the potential for income is. You can say, well, you know, I didn't do that much into Social Security because I work for the government and there's pension offset and all. Still want you to go talk to them. Even if I tell you there's no zero, let's find out for sure what's there. Something may have been missed in the story that I'm told.
All right, let's go to the phones then. Glenn, New Orleans, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Glenn?
Hey, guys. You were talking about Social Security, and my question is, my wife's from England. She's not a full-blown citizen yet because she hasn't done the test yet or whatever she needs to do. If I die today or tomorrow, where does my Social Security go?
How long have you been married?
3.5, 4 years.
Yeah, I think she has to reach the 10-year mark? But we've talked about the foreign citizenship. That's never been a problem before, depending on what country and where she's going to live. But then it's categorized by what kind of country. And seeing how she's from the UK, if I'm not mistaken, because we've had this before, as long as y'all are together for 10 years, she'll get your Social Security survivor's benefits.
Even if she lives in the UK?
Yes. Now, depending on what country she lives, the rules change. The UK is in one of the safe countries. If she goes to a country that's sort of not quite a NATO ally of us, then she may have to check in once a year. Like if she's in, I think we had to look up Brazil is what it was. Some guy was going to do.
She's from England.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, if she was from somewhere else, she may and decided to go live in another country, she would still get it. She may have to go jump through a hoop like once a year, once every 6 months, has to check in at a consulate or an embassy. But and if she moved to Cuba or North Korea, she wouldn't get it at all. But as far as the UK, you're on really good footing that she will get your check.
Yeah, she because you've qualified for it, and it is a spouse, they're going to qualify for those benefits. You can be a non-US citizen and qualify for benefits if you have 40 work credits built up. So you can be a non-US person working and get that. Now, for them to pay money overseas, like James mentioned, we basically have to be on good terms with that country. There's a few that the US is not letting dollars flow that way.
But if she stays here, it's a done deal.
But we have to be married for 10 years before she receives my benefits from Social Security?
I think I'm confusing rules. 10 years on if she gets divorced, she could still go back. You just have to be married for what is it, like 9 months or 2 years? Or I forgot what the other cutoff is.
Yeah, it's a short period of time.
To get the survivor's benefit if you just die while you're still married. Gregory's right. I was thinking of the divorce benefit.
Okay. All right. Well, that kind of answered my question.
Yeah, that's all good news for the wife there. So congrats, and I hope she's digging the country. And, you know, if you happen to pass away, see if you can convince her to stay. I think we like having Glenn's wife around a little bit. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. And y'all didn't see that, but when I get a stat wrong, Gregory just looks, and I feel appropriately guilty. So sorry for getting that 10-year window wrong. I was thinking of the divorced benefits. But divorced people can go to another country and still get a check.
Yeah, your first number was 9 months.
Nine months. Thank you.
Short period of time.
So Glenn's already good. They've been married 3 years. All right. So that's all cut and dry and done. Good for Glenn. They don't want to send any checks to North Korea these days, Gregory.
That's one of those countries you're not getting the widow's benefit if you live or move over there. They'll cut you off.
Do we have anybody who's passing away and leaving their American husband to go back to the great state of North Korea?
You know, that goes to if workers go work in a certain countries. They're not getting Social Security withheld from that company that sent them over there to work in that. It's just, there's a few of those. And those are, if the U.S. isn't willing for dollars to exchange like that, you probably shouldn't be over there. It's not a good place
to be. The better scenarios I like are when people have made all their money here and they want to go move to like a tropical island just to chill for the rest of their retirement. And they have their retirement check sent there. That's a little less complicated. Val, New Orleans, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks, and we only got about a minute and a half here, Val.
Thank you guys for taking my call. I appreciate sure. it. Look, I just have a question about something called the WEP program. It's are you familiar with that? I'm a retired firefighter, and I have a pension from the fire department, and my Social Security, I'm being told, is going to be cut.
So you're talking about windfall elimination provision, WEP?
That's it.
Yep, that's it.
Gregory knows about it. Help him out.
Yeah, it's going to be reduced. Did you have any work history that paid into Social Security benefits?
Yes, I did. Okay. Not during the fire department years, but before and after.
So how many years was that?
I got 40. I have my 40 quarters. I'm eligible for Social Security. They telling me that I'm going to get $687 a month, but it's going to be reduced and all the way up to maybe 75%.
Yeah, it's what the windfall elimination provision is, and it doesn't have really anything to do with your 40 quarters basically gets you Social Security benefits. Very low hurdle to jump over to get Social Security going. But really the effect of it is you built a pension system where you didn't participate in Social Security. To have an exception to override that, you need to have 30 years or more of substantial earnings to make the windfall go away.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Val. For the rest of y'all, you're home away from the show, winningitlife.com and the Winning It Life app. And if you want to go to Gregory's next live event coming up Tuesday on the North Shore, gregoryricks.com or call the office 504-832-9200. I'm James Parker. We are Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks.